We're joined now by one of our regular guests. I'm so glad, Sam Cook. He's the Duluth News Tribune columnist and outdoors writer. Thank you for joining us, Sam.
Happy to be with you, CJ.
So, Sam, great column on July 1st where you were talking about, it was this great story about the Pink Lady Lure. And you're not talking about my favorite variety of apple here. You are talking about something very different.
Right. We had a neat encounter when we were coming out of Quetico Park on the north side of the park. Quetico is just north of the Boundary Waters in Canada, and we often travel up there for a June canoe trip. And we'd had pretty good luck fishing for walleyes and lake trout, and two of our folks on the trip had caught big lake trout on the way out, or nice lake trout, 6 or 7 pounds. And they were carrying them out, and we meet this group of a couple adults and some kids, high school kids, going into the woods. They looked all clean and spiffy, and we looked dirty and ratty. And they were pretty impressed with these lake trout. A couple of my buddies had wanted to take some home to their family, so that's why they fished on their way out that morning. And so one of my friends, Clint Mullen from here in Duluth, was just taken by this, the fact that they were, these adults were taking this group of kids into the canoe country, which maybe doesn't happen as much as it used to. Mm. And so he started marking the map of where we caught lake trout on this trip and how deep they were, and here's how you need to fish them. And one of the things we use is the Pink Lady, which is not a lure. It's just the device that takes the line down to the proper depth where the fish are. And then you put a little leader behind that with a fleshy spoon, and you paddle along at, 1.5 miles per hour. And the lake trout are there, and they are cooperative. And so these folks who we met were quite interested in all this. And, yes, they were planning to fish, but not everybody had rods. And so we just gave them Pink Ladies and several of our spoons to use. And thought we'd never see him again, but Clint got their phone number from them before they left, and by gosh, they call when they get back, and they've caught a ton of fish. I can't remember everybody on all the kids caught fish. They traded the rod back and forth and paddled on the spots that we told them, and they showed us a picture, and my, they did quite well. they caught a lot of nice fish. So yeah, it was just that deal that in some small way you pass it on if you have the opportunity. I salute Clint for, taking the lead on that.
Well, he sounds like a wonderful man. And in your story, you say he's 70 years old?
He is, yep. Which sounds old until I think how old I am.
I know, it changes, doesn't it?
I'm always saying, well, there's this old guy. Well, yeah, he's probably about my age. But anyway, and he said he's done this many times over the years with what he thinks are kind of the people who would appreciate it and use it. And he said, I can't tell you how many Pink Ladies I've given away, and not all of them come back, but he just believes in it. And so, he has kids of his own and stuff, and he loves the canoe country, and he just wants to share that. And, mm-hmm. and it's worked out well, I think, the other time.
Well, it's the gift that keeps on giving. I mean, because you guys shared, this is sort of a remarkable story in many ways, because first of all, you took the time to stop and chat with these folks that you did not know, and he was able to share this great fishing spot, which a lot of fisher people don't do, and shared equipment, and turned this event that might have been sort of so-so for some kids if this was their first experience into a very exciting, probably life-changing wilderness, falling in love with experience. That was just amazing.
Yeah, I agree. I think that you never know how it affects a person at that age. I was lucky enough to be hauled up to the Boundary Waters by a couple of people in our little hometown in Kansas when I was 15. Ah. I never knew where I was. We went all over the Quetico for 10 days and caught fish and had just an amazing time. And, I kind of filed it away, and I'm sure I wouldn't be living up here today and have spent my career and my wife and I raising kids up here if we hadn't been exposed to that way back when. I mean, mm-hmm. something could have happened along the way after that, but that's those are pretty impressionable years, and it's kind of nice to have a little sense of what's out there when you're young enough to maybe act on it when the time comes.
Indeed. What are some of the benefits that you've seen introducing young people to the outdoors?
Well, I don't know. My friends and I talk about this. I think that when you're out in the natural world, and especially when you're human-powered, you know, running, biking, skiing, paddling, whatever, you kind of have to look at the world a little differently, and you can't just run for cover with a, you know, 115-horse motor if the rain comes up. And it teaches you to deal with elements and not be in control all the time. It teaches you delayed gratification in that you might have to paddle a long way to get to a good spot. I think that it also, when you overcome challenges, you often find yourself in situations where you just aren't sure how things are going to turn out. You're not sure you can handle these waves, or you're not sure you can get to that far shoreline before dark or whatever. And once you've been in those situations and come through, I think it gives you a sense of confidence that in an odd way transfers to the rest of your life. You just feel like you can do things, and you've proven it to yourself. And we're all going to be in situations where we are not quite in control, or we don't know how it's going to go, or it might require a lot more effort than we realize. It might be in business, it might be in school, it might be in anything. And those experiences in the woods, I think, translate.
Mm-hmm. No, I would totally agree. So
that's part of it. I don't know. Plus, yeah. it also, I think, makes you want to protect areas and stand up for areas that are still wild and natural. Mm-hmm. And we've done a lot of shaping of our world in cities and most of the places we live, but I think there's a lot of value in having places where you, when it's, you know, at the end of the day and everybody's in camp, it's really quiet. And there are some people who've never been in the kind of silence that you can find yourself in up there. Right. And I think once you have been, you value that, and you are willing to try to keep some of that country around.
Yeah. So you alluded to this a little bit earlier. By the way, we're talking with Sam Cook. He's the outdoor writer and columnist for Duluth News Tribune. How have you seen the relationship that youth has with the outdoors change with the advance of technology?
Well, it has changed in that satellites changed everything, in that you can, you know, send up a beacon from anywhere in the world and it gets picked up by a plane or something and gets sent to an emergency center and they'll fly in and pick you up without even knowing how badly you're broken up or whatever. So there's a safety net there that wasn't there before. I think for a lot of people, the idea of going into a wilderness and not having cell service is daunting. Mm-hmm. I think we realize how short our attention spans have become, and it's probably quite an adjustment for people who are really tied to their phone. And I'm pretty tied to my phone for work and life and everything else, but I'm happy to put it away for a while up there. Mm-hmm. But I think for a lot of people, that's hard, and it's probably, I don't know, I think our world has become so sophisticated and so comfortable that sometimes we may find it a little daunting to be dirty, cold, wet for any kind of an extended period, and it might take a few days of a trip before you settle into that, mm-hmm. which I think you always can, but no doubt. And I've talked to canoe outfitters who say, yeah, or fishing guides who say, yeah, I've got guys in my boat who are checking their, if they have service on the fringe of the canoe country or something, checking to see how the stock market's doing several times a day.
Ugh.
So I don't know. It's sad in some ways, I guess. It's our world. It's the way it is. And I have embraced technology. I love a lot of the technology that allows me to do my job and to stay in touch with my kids who live overseas, and I can FaceTime them. And I just, when you're born in the 1940s, you think that's pretty cool. but it is, it does change the way we have to think when we go to places where we don't have that. And I think if it, once you're there, good things do happen.
Yeah.
You will wean yourself and settle in.
Yeah. I loved your point about the silence, though. I mean, what an adjustment. Now, when I go to the city, the noise is what drives me back up here to Grand Marais within, 24 hours, 36 hours. I just can't take the noise. So in reverse, I'm sure people who are used to that level, they come up here and it's like, oh, my God, it's too quiet.
Yeah, I suppose it is a little. I think some people are, because we are so citified or so used to civilization, I think there are people for whom it's a little scary to walk into the woods if you have to go to the bathroom late at night or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think we tend to fear bears or whatever things that might go bump in the night more than we should, because we've become pretty civilized. But I do think you can, and I think that's the cool thing about taking kids up there. They can learn early in life that they can. It's a really powerful thing. They learn that they can adapt to that and feel comfortable out there, and I think that's a great thing.
Me too, Sam Cook. I'm glad you called in on Roadhouse today, but I can't let you go until I find out what kind of fun adventures and trips you're planning this summer.
Oh, I thought you were going to ask me to pledge, and
absolutely.
I am a sustaining NPR member, but I don't belong to WTIP. I probably should. I don't know. We'll get up to the Quetico again. My wife and I'll go up there. We don't have anything too big. I'll hunt sharp-tailed grouse in Montana this fall and sleep in a farmer's hay yard, pitch a tent out there like we always do. Our kids are going to be here from Africa in another few weeks, and we'll go up and poke around the Ely area a little bit, probably at a friend's cabin up there. I'm doing a story very soon about a couple of outfits down here that are introducing people to the outdoors through guiding businesses that have just popped up in the last couple of years. They are both doing a lot of business with people who visit Duluth or the North Shore who want to go mountain biking or kayaking or fat biking in the winter or tour breweries or whatever. So that's another way you can still introduce people to it in a good, safe, and organized way.
Nice.
So those are all things coming up, I guess.
All right. Where can people read your column?
Online at DuluthNewsTribune.com or in the physical paper if you happen to be in Duluth. Those are the ways, and I'm on Facebook a fair bit. Just look for my name, I have both Sam Cook and Sam Cook Outdoors. So they can find me there, too.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us this evening on The Roadhouse.
A lot of fun. Keep up the good work, CJ.
Thank you. Sam Cook, Duluth News Tribune columnist and outdoor writer.